This is the CRA Podcast, a podcast committed to highlighting the great work across the nation in transforming communities through the power of economic development and the Community Reinvestment Act. And now, here's your host and CRA enthusiast, Linda Lewis Izuka.
So just when we were all getting ready to sit down and draft our OCC and the FDIC CRA comment letters in preparation for the April 8th deadline, the unfathomable happened. In a blink of an eye, a seemingly nanosecond, our world shifted into an unthinkable episode of The Twilight Zone. Our new normal is navigating our new makeshift home offices, the flooded internet, and Zoom channels striving for connectivity, responding to our customers' shifting needs while coordinating homeschool lessons for our bored young offspring. Wow, I don't know. Who would have thunk? So now, meanwhile, our local financial institutions, first and foremost, have been hard at work to ensure everyone's safety. They are also balancing the needs of their employees with the needs of their consumers by limiting branch hours and their branch distribution to ensure the availability of our most essential banking services needs. They are also increasing their sanitation practices and implementing social distancing with the blue tapes across their branch floors, all in a collective effort to flatten the curve. On March 9th, the federal financial institution regulatory agencies, meaning the FRB, the OCC, and the FDIC, and state bank regulators, issued a statement to encourage financial institutions to meet the financial services needs of their communities, customers, and members in their area affected by COVID-19. Per the Centers for Disease Control, the coronavirus, or now known as the coronavirus disease of 2019, is commonly abbreviated now as COVID-19. The CO stands for corona, the V for virus, and D for disease. So even though the interagency statement is very much like prior communications on disasters and national emergencies, the agencies encourage financial institutions to work with affected customers and communities, particularly those that are low and moderate income, in new and innovative ways to respond during these unprecedented times. The agency recognizes that such efforts, when consistent with safe and sound banking practices and applicable laws, including consumer protection laws, serve the long-term interest of these communities and the financial system. So what does this actually mean? Pursuant to the Community Reinvestment Act, the agencies will favorably consider retail banking services and retail lending activities in a financial institution's assessment area that are responsive to the needs of low and moderate income individuals, small businesses, and small farms affected by COVID-19, and that are consistent with safe and sound banking practices. These activities may include, but of course are not limited to, waiving certain fees, easing certain restrictions on cashing checks, expanding the availability of unsecured credit products for creditworthy borrowers, increasing credit limits for, again, creditworthy borrowers, providing alternative service options to customers in limited ability to access branches, offering payment accommodations such as allowing borrowers to defer or skip payments, or extending the payment due date, which would avoid delinquencies and negative credit bureau reporting caused by COVID-19 related issues. This interagency proclamation of sorts will be effective through the 6-month period after the national emergency declaration is lifted, unless extended by the agencies. So, how exactly are banks responding? One lovely accommodation that restores my belief in humanity is the early or special banking hours for seniors. This is right up there with certain retailers allowing our seniors to access special shopping hours so they have the best chance of securing the coveted toilet paper purchase. Geez, again, who would have thought that our society would be fixated on the availability of toilet paper? So I digress. Since we need large and small banks and everyone in between to respond to the numerous needs in our communities near and far, many banks are starting to release their loan forbearance, extensions, and loan deferral programs in response. Some banks are even offering a consumer employment disruption loan program, which offers a low interest rate, unsecured personal loan up to 24 months, or consumer loan deferrals. And let's take a moment to reflect on how complicated these programs might be for banks on the back end. The regulatory agencies expect that all banks follow through on these programs in a safe and sound manner. So this statement is not a wild mandate to be irresponsible. Banks must continue to comply with consumer and commercial regulatory provisions and must now document any such loans made through these programs with care and be mindful of several provisions, including they need to make sure that everything they do is consistent with the accounting standards code, the troubled debt restructuring provisions, or TDRs, their non-accrual statement and allocation for credit losses, their ACL, their allowances for loan and lease losses, their ALLL, charge-offs, cash management provisions, and balancing their community bank leverage ratio, or CBLR. Again, our banks have their hands full in keeping everything in balance during this trying time. But on a lighter note, I've asked a friend who happens to run a local community bank how he is responding to his customers in light of the interagency response, and he eloquently responded with this, that he and his teams will respond how he has always responded to his clients. He'll continue to listen to the needs of the customers with empathy and will respond as they always have, with flexibility and customized terms as necessary. It is in times like these that community banks really shine with that nimble and flexible attitude. So as we continue to navigate these unprecedented times, let's continue to be curious. Let's not forget to pause and ask ourselves as bankers, as community development advocates and nonprofit leaders, what else is possible? How can we partner with CDFIs to extend the traditional boundaries of capital where it is most needed? How can we leverage programs and services provided by social service agencies, federal health clinics, and community action agencies to meet the foundational needs of the most economically vulnerable? How can we further lift local community foundation and philanthropic emergency response funds to invest capital for the greater good? This pandemic is an unprecedented challenge for the entire country and the world, but especially for our most economically fragile people, our local organizations and businesses in our communities. And it is natural about now to also ask what we can do as families, as individuals, and just as a good human. What else can we do to support our most vulnerable? Although we need all businesses, large and small, to come through this crisis as a going concern, now more than ever, the small business community needs your support. If you can, shop small and local. Heck, even let those kids and teenagers choose which restaurants they want to take turns supporting with a swift takeout order for your next family meal. Support the people and businesses you love. And above all else, be thankful for those walls that surround you and that roof that hovers over those you hold most dear, even though they might be driving you a little crazy. So until next time, take care of you and yours. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the CRA Podcast with Linda Lewis-Izuka. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, cratoday.com. Don't forget to leave us a positive review on iTunes and be sure to check out our archive section on our website for previous podcasts. Join us next time for another edition of the CRA Podcast.